Our next speaker is Mike Simon. Mike Simon has over 30 years of experience in the field of broadcast engineering and is currently the manager of Advanced Technologies Broadcast Division of Rohde & Schwarz. Mike has a BSEE and MSEE from the University of Pittsburgh. He is an active member of ATSC TSG S4 mobile handheld, IEEE BTS TIA TR47, Flow Forum, and DVB technical module. Mike holds several patents in the area of digital television, and he's getting mic'd up right now.
My name is Mike Simon. I'm with Rohde & Schwarz, and I guess when I signed up to do this speaking engagement, it was last year, and I guess just reminiscing back, we were in a competitive phase, as Wayne mentioned at the time, and we were partners with Samsung, one of the large Korean companies who was participating in development of mobile and handheld, and we went through all this competitive phases with him, and when it came time this year, the competitive phase is over. As Wayne said, the consensus of the OMBC and the ATSC was that the MPH system, or is now called MH system, was selected, and it's going to go forward, and we fully support that. I was asked, would I still want to keep my engagement since I was going to talk on AVSB, which was the competitive solution, and or would I have another topic that would be relevant? And I said, well, yes, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. And it's about the synchronization of these mobile handheld networks, just as there's a relationship on synchronization, how you put content into these systems to get the benefit. And so I thought it was relevant, so I'm going to go ahead and speak on that topic today. The subject of the topic is ATSC mobile handheld based on the GPS EPIC. And so essentially what we've done with AVSB, which we can possibly move over into MH. Now, I must preface by saying at this time what I'm going to speak about here is somewhat in discussion within ATSC. It is not part of the candidate standard. It may be at some time maybe considered for inclusion if it warrants it. So that's where I'm at. This is not a candidate proposed standard at the moment. But we believe it's synergistic technology that could help enhance or maybe improve the user experience. So I'll describe what this ATSC system time is and what it could mean to a mobile ATSC mobile handheld system, talk about some potential applications, and then have some conclusions and take any questions if I could. There was one other company that's involved with us on this synchronization part, which started back a couple years ago when we were with AVSB, and the company's name is Rossum. They're a Silicon Valley company, and they were founded by some of the original architects that wrote some of the protocol, the spread spectrum codes that are used on satellite, Dr. Spilker, and others founded this company, and they had a vision that GPS had some limits, and that using these high-powered megawatt transmitters someday could possibly enable enhancements or augmentation to GPS or make it work where maybe even GPS wouldn't work, like indoors, like where we're at right now. And so we kind of started to explore that. I will talk about that later. That's only part of the story. But that was the reason why we started looking at the synchronization, and I'll tell you the story when we get there. We're Rohde & Schwarz. We are one of the equipment manufacturers, and I would applaud and thank LG and Zenith, as Wayne said. They are reaching out. We have had some productive meetings with them and trying to get the industry to start to rally around this standard to get something moving forward. System time, I call it ATSC system time, and what it is it defines a relationship. There is a MH frame structure, which I'll show you, that's inherent in this ATSC system, and it's made up of 20 VSB frames. And if you count those in time, that's slightly less than 1 second in duration, about 0.68 milliseconds, slightly under 1 second in duration. We found that there was, and with Rossum, we found that there was a relationship or a mathematical integer relationship between that cadence of and the one pulse per second that runs from GPS. And we found that we could lock and derive one from the other, and it would make for a very handy reference signal available anywhere that you would have GPS. So that means if you have this, if your whole system in MH is built on the structure of 20 frames per second, and I have a box that I derive a timing signal from GPS, that I could be on a mountaintop in a studio anywhere in the world and come up with a known timing signal that has a meaning, because we defined a meaning to an epoch, and we thought there would be some value. There's other standards that are mobile today, such as TDMB, DVH, WiMAX, MediaFlow, they take pretty much of their timing. They lock themselves to a GPS global reference. There are benefits to that. That's what essentially the potential enhancements that this technology could bring to mobile handheld if it moves forward into the market is the topic of discussion. Some of those right off the bat that I'll talk about very briefly once I tell you what this technology is and how it's applied is that its possibility of doing handoffs. There's broadcasters envision, and it's discussed in the standard, candidate standard, that there could be the possibility of what's called regionalized services that are essentially available in more broadcasters outside your own your own coverage area. And then there's local services, which essentially you carry in your own market. So having some synchronization or deterministic framing, which is locked to some type of external reference GPS in nature, could possibly lead to the enhancement of a handoff capability or roaming. You find that in cellular technology today. And going forward, if we start delivering mobile and handheld services, it would be nice when you're mobile to possibly, if you're receiving a regionalized service as you're driving down the highway and you're fading out of one region, but if the receiver is smart enough to know it's coming into a region where that same program is, make a more or less seamless transition autonomously without bothering the user to continue on consuming that program. And that regional content could be from a national provider that has that in mind. It wants to create a national footprint. So it would open up the possibilities, the things like that. New forms of diversity. Also for single frequency networks, if they are proved helpful for filling in gaps in service areas, the mechanisms for synchronizing single frequency networks, if they were derived from a system based on this GPS epoch, would be much more simpler to implement for broadcasters and to operate. It also opens up the possibility of maybe having some interoperability way down in the future here with other networks that are also a common clock. Could mean something if you start thinking of just myself being local, but now I'm part of a network which has regional scope and having timing that is common. Could enhance some capabilities that you would have. So we think that now is the opportune time to bring up discussions like this when the candidate standard is just being poured right now into the mold and things are coming together. That introducing these concepts early on would be a good thing. It also it aligns rather well with work that's concept of work that's being done at SMPTE EBU right now. On new synchronization, there's a task force out right now that is looking, everything is timed on black burst now in your studio. And going forward, SMPTE's taking a look that maybe some type of GPS-derived absolute time reference may be something to look at. And I know there's work going on there. This would certainly align itself with that type of effort. Getting into it now, this is the system block that's composes the system. There's two basic processing blocks. This is the complete MH system. And if you would, this would be the studio on the upper side with the multiplexer, and this would be the transmitter down here. There's a post-processing block, which Wayne was talking about. That's the new code, channel coding, that's in the exciter. That will be in the exciter. And then there was this new processing block at the studio to put the more robust coding. There's a form of codes called turbo codes that are used most specifically in this system that really accounts for a lot of the gains, the coding gains that are had. So you have two major blocks, and they're separated by a studio to transmitter link, if you will. Simplifying it, you could even simplify it further down to, I have a normal transmitter here, but it has some special circuitry in it for pre-processing, and I have a special pre-processor and multiplexer at the studio. My normal HD would be coming in on this feed, coming into this box here. And I have this STL. And what's going on over this STL, coming from this, what's called a packet mux, it's building this structure. It's called a mobile handheld frame structure, and it looks like this. It's made up of these frames, which are 968 milliseconds in duration, and then there's subframes of those, and then these are broken down into slots. And slots are an opportunity where you could either put mobile handheld data in that slot or just normal data in that slot. And it's very important for how the system works, how it is multiplexed and put together. It has to be done in a certain fashion, which you have to signal which slots you're going to use for mobile, and then you have to put content into those slots. With the synchronization we have, we can think of, from a large view, looking at a system such as this, as this MH structure is a virtual container, if you will. It's made up of segments and data fields, and just, it's all normal stuff, like you say. If you look at it with a spectrum analyzer, you would not be able to tell there's anything different, but in it, there's some embedded signaling that's telling you, well, here's the beginning of this, and this is this slot, and this slot, and this slot going forward. And so in those slots, there's essence. Essence is, I guess, the word that's used for content or metadata, the stuff that you consume. So we believe that having this known cadence signal that's easy to lock to GPS, a real signal that it could synchronize the select content and cause the container structures, the MH frames that are emitted from stations, which I'll show you. We believe if you could time align those so that your frames start with everybody else's frames, that could help with, just intuitively, if you wanted to switch from one channel to the other. If you knew where you were switching, where you were going to land in the frame structure of another station, you might think about how you do that. And so for handoff and purposes like this, it sets the stage. Instead of having a random nature, if you're going to start thinking about these MH services as a network, where you could have these roaming services. Looking a little further into the slot structure, on the side here is there's 156 packets that make up one of these slots, and they go in a known relationship. In this is an 8 VSB normal data frame for 8 VSB, and they're put in there at exactly a known offset. And the reason is that receivers can find this enhanced data that's turbo coded. Just a little bit on the technology now and really why and how this works, if I could try to describe it. The normal trellis coding and Viterbi decoding that a receiver uses in 8 VSB is just not good in Rayleigh or multipath, heavy multipath, fast fading environments. Turbo codes are essentially known that they approve that they have very good coding gain. The whole question about how would you introduce such a new coding in a system without breaking it is the question. That's what was solved by Zenith and LG. And what they did was a turbo code is essentially two coders. One is here, which is a new coder, which would be in that preprocessor block, which would be in your MUX. Here is an interleaver, which is just memory where they permutate the signal, they shuffle it around. And then you have an existing inner coder, which is made up of 12 trellis coders. If you put the content in packets at select points in time, and it's in the frame at select points in time, you'll know which trellis encoder it goes through and where it will actually appear in the physical layer frame. And that's how receivers, MH receivers, find the content. They don't look, if you're familiar with PIDs, where you have to tune into a PID, use PSIP, and you find a PID, and you look up the program association table. What they do is they look for the physical frame structure, and they look for a physical location where they think they have been signaled that one of these slots are appearing, and they start decoding those symbols as robust symbols. And they know which symbols are robust, and they know which symbols are just carrying your normal HDTV content. The normal content is just, it just passes through. It never touches it. But the receiver is smart enough, and it's synchronized very tightly on the physical layer, that it can find and identify each one of those robust coded symbols. And what's kind of critical about this, this part here is sitting at your studio, and it has to run through your transmitter. That's sitting on top of the mountain. That's why you need this exact timing relationship to make sure that these packets align into the in the physical lane frame structure, so that you will be able to locate them and take benefit of this robust decoding. And the true nature of turbo decoding is that you decode a block through an iterative decoding process. This is the decoder here. You have you deinterleave it, you make one pass at decoding it, then you reinterleave it again, and you gain some information about that. You go through this loop several times on this block of data, and when you get there, essentially what you're doing is every time you go through it, you drive down the signal to noise. And by the time you get through several iterations on that, you know, you have converged on the signal, and you can receive a signal that was unreceivable before, as he was saying, at 4 dB, signal to noise. It's through this power of this code. The synchronization to make this possible is very relevant, because if you just put it in haphazard and scattered, the turbo decoder could not differentiate what is a normal symbol, because they run through the same intercoder, and what is a robust symbol. And the turbo decoder would essentially not work. It would not give you very good gain at all. But if you get it synchronized, it will give you excellent gain. Matter of fact, it has the appearance of being located at the physical layer. It would be such as taking this turbo coding out of the system, the normal turbo coding, and replacing it with this enhanced, taking the trellis coding, the normal trellis coding out of the 8VSB system and putting in this turbo coding just for the enhanced for the mobile. And essentially, that's the effect. And so just a little FYI, but that's how the system works in a nutshell. It's using turbo codes that through synchronization the receivers can find, and they can identify them and not screw up the decoding process and only touch the robust symbols and ignore all others. That's how the system, that's why we have mobile today. AVSB worked pretty similar. So, talking about synchronization, right now there's nothing in the standard or the rules that says when you feed a program stream into your digital transmitter, you're going to make these data frames, 8VSB data frames, but there's no rhyme or reason for one would start. What we've done is by defining a mathematical relationship between this frame structure, which is 20 frames, and the GPS 1 second tick, we've also aligned ourselves with the beginning of when the GPS period was, and that was in January 6, 1980. And we made a simple definition, and we have a mathematical relationship. So we just said, at that point, we call it the ATSE epoch. It's equal to when the GPS seconds started ticking from the satellites. And that is the instant that the first symbol of a segment sync, of the first data field sync, of the first MH frame was emitted at the air interface of all stations, all DTB stations. That occurred in 1980, so it's just a definition. But if I make that definition, then have a rigid mathematical relationship, I can predict any future time when an MH frame would start. And if I say the demarcation is the air interface of your station, I know what those delays are. I can calculate. I can deliver content to that demarcation point with nanosecond accuracy. The relationships are such. There's a known. We're talking symbols now. We got it. We're not using normally under synchronization. There's a signal called a one pulse per second that is derived from GPS. And that's on a second cadence. We got our own cadence that's aligned right with our frame structure. And there's a relationship between the two. If you know what GPS time is through this equation, you will get what system time is. And if you know what system time is, you can derive the other. So it's pretty easy to come up with this timing. It's just a pulse train, and it's also a count. There's a new pulse that's being generated, which we call a one pulse per MH frame. that comes out of the system. And it's basically, it's a simple idea. You have a normal GPS receiver with some additional little circuitry, and you generate with some logic these additional pulses that are coming on, and they're timed align with that definition. So that means if I have two stations that says, here, take this pulse, use that to regulate your start of your data framing or your framing in your station for this MH frame, they can be made to time align. I could, and so that's a simple concept, but it's pretty powerful. And when you have the capability of translating between GPS seconds and this MH time, you could also take essence, which is at a remote location somewhere, and know when that has to be emitted if you can control the delay time to the air interface, which is possible. And so it would allow you to know when to release essence so that essence would propagate the network in the containers, and the containers hit the air interface at the correct time. That's the kind of concepts that we envision could happen. Again, a basic concept is this is since it's an integer, it's monotonically increasing. There's no GPS seconds, leap seconds, or anything. It's essentially a machine time that could control the machines in the network. Those machines would be multiplexers, exciters, and other types of equipment that would transport this MH containers, MH frames. Now to look at some of the applications. That was a pretty very brief overview of what it is. Channel change is something a consumer experience. The more friendly or the faster that can happen, the more friendly a service would be could be perceived by the user. So we'll take a look at that, at what impact this system time could have to that experience. This handoff or roaming, essentially how that could happen with this additional timing reference. Take a look at SFN and a new SFN architecture, which could have real interest if this service grows to become a real commodity. And last but not least is the services that was originally envisioned by Rossum for positioning. Being able to use your transmitters and have a device, a very cheap device, that will be able to have positioning so you could deliver location-based services or advertising, stuff like this. Without the need for a GPS. The channel change improvement time is very simple. If you have one of these system time generators, which are generating the pulses, this is the one pulse every MH frame, which is 20 VVSB frames, and I'm going to emit a beginning of a frame at that time, and if I'm locked to this both global signal, which is available through GPS, I can time align these two frames. If I want to switch to another frame that has a switch to another channel and another program that's on another frame, where I switch and where I land with respect to that other frame, if I knew that, if I had priori knowledge or could control that situation, I could affect the user experience. It become a more positive than negative thing. So leave it at that. I think with the right minds, this technology could be utilized to improve. Again, an enhancement if this service takes off. Another possibility is handoff between these stations. I'm showing here MFN stations or SFN stations over a large regional area that may have a common content that is being broadcast. You're broadcasting for a service provider for some network, and having a receiver that could autonomously tune to discover the services and continue consuming the services without having to interrupt the viewer. Taking a look at synchronization of essence and content, looking at this block diagram again, this would show a regional type of service, a conceptual diagram, where you would have regional essence that would be out here. You would have timing and GPS either via an NTP server, which could be locked back to GPS, or a true GPS at the transmitter site. Between this MUX and here is those virtual containers, which has frame here. There's essence coming here of Local One Nation. There's essence here. It's just at this point in time, I can control the delay to what this air interface is. It becomes a known quantity. I can control it. I can buffer it. and it is predictable. So if I know that I have content I want to have on the air here in a certain container, I can timestamp it, put it in there, and it will be in that container when it hits the air interface. So that's, and once you have that, if you have this regional content that's on another station in the next market over, and he's synchronized to me, and he's carrying content that it's equal in nature, I would have the opportunity to possibly hand off to him and maybe an event in a way that would be good. This is just showing this diagram very, showing this would be select regional content could be synchronized in this network through the synchronization mechanism. Again, you could do roaming and handoff without this, but I think the benefits, that the experience that you could have could be much better using this. Single frequency networks, there's a standard right now, A110. I'm working with Merrill Weiss of the standard to bring these concepts into that standard. As far as having two SFNs that are synchronized, but have that again synchronized to another station that's not part of that network, could have advantage. This is looking forward. This is far looking, but it's not outside the reach of where we think this technology could go. If it really gets embraced and takes off, and if you got a lot of hills and valleys and whatnot, and if consumers want a consumer experience that's more typical to the cell phone today, which means indoors and a lot, there could be a possibility. We're a transmitter manufacturer. We think there could be a possibility to have a strategic location of some additional transmitters to help fill in this service. And if a lot of broadcasters wanted to do that, we could possibly think that maybe having a satellite, one satellite with a spot beam that could serve the whole all markets in the United States. And on that spot beam uplink here, you only have to run the robust regional or national content. You could have another circuit coming from your studio local here, either back up onto the bird to a Conus beam or off some other type of fiber circuits, just bringing maybe 4 or 5 megabits per second into those sites. And at those sites, you would reassemble the containers into this MH frame in a fashion that would still be in cadence with this rhythm going on. So this would be an edge, a distributed multiplexing with edge multiplexing, but everything is timed to a synchronous network. This could drive down the cost significantly for the satellite operator to be able to support this, that he doesn't have to support 19.3 from every broadcaster to take a Conus feed off a bird. That could have pretty significant benefit if this service takes off. Doesn't make sense today, but down the road, you never know. Again, the same concepts would apply with the intermarket roaming and stuff. At the satellite head end, I could have system time there. Again, I could set a delay, control a delay through that satellite, have a max delay that I still know what the air interface time is, and I know what a release time of essence is to hit that, to be in the container, to hit the air interface. And so we think it's equally important. Last couple of slides is on this ROSM, our partner in this technology, which when we originally was working with 8VSB, ROSM approached me and they said, hey, we got this technology that we look at these data field sinks. That's the PN511 sequences that are in these data fields. And we find those and we can detect when they arrive at a particular location. And if we can get multiple signals from multiple stations, we can pseudo range and we can calculate a position. And since the satellite signals are pretty weak, they're very weak signals, they come vertically down, they try to penetrate buildings, whereas broadcasters sometimes have a million watts at a lower frequency band that penetrates, that comes horizontally, that it could be really an ideal thing that could get into a lot of places that GPS doesn't work too good in today. The only gotcha is that for them to do this, since all these stations are kind of always asynchronous, their symbol clocks aren't locked on, their frame rates are skewed all over the place, he says, could you come up, about SF, I've developed some SFN systems for Rohde, And it's, could you come up with a way that you could synchronize these stations across multiple channels? And if you could do it, he goes, damn, he goes, we could take, right now what we have to do is have a monitoring point in the field, measure the accuracy of all these signals, and feed it back over some return channel to the device. And then the device can give you a provision fix. If we can get rid of that, all that goes away. The cost bill of materials go way down. This thing becomes very cost effective solution for broadcasters. The cost of the bill of materials to build this, if the transmitter locations are synchronous and they're not moving and they're locked, it could drastically simplify the system. The codes that they run on, the correlation that they do, they can get signals down to 128 dB. It's way below any type of threshold that you would be using on the 8VSB signals. And they can find them in rooms and buildings and stuff at very low levels. And they're usable to get a fix. This is just some actual measurements. This is from inside in Manhattan. So try to get a GPS to work in Manhattan. This was using on-air signals right now, but with a server that was a monitoring point with an assist server coming back. But they believe that, you know, if we can get rid of that and really lock the station down, the capabilities for doing positioning to either augment GPS or have it work in areas, in urban areas where it doesn't work too well now, could be something good. And if broadcasters are going mobile, hey, maybe this is a tool. If you know where the customer is, or they know where they are, maybe you can use that to your advantage. So we think that system time could certainly have some, these are just some of the possible capability that could happen there. Also, the government's a little bit interested. There is some vulnerabilities to GPS. It can be jammed and it's kind of weak. So I think there's possible for some public interest obligations of broadcasters if they would lock their signals down and provide a stable signal that can be used for reference. I mean, as far as Homeland Security or other forms of enhanced services would be a good thing. You know, you mentioned Katrina or others. If you had signals there that could be, other than entertain, can do other things, might not be a bad idea. And the cost of entry is very, very cheap. As far as, and right now when we're talking about building this MH standards to include such functionality as this or make this functionality possible, is something we're interested in pursuing. So that was a quick overview. I know this maybe first you've never even heard of it, mobile handheld before. But that was a big mouthful. But in a nutshell, that's what it is, and we think there's some definite contributions that can be made. So that's about it. I would entertain any questions if anybody would have those. What happened to receivers?
Yes, there's an interruption to the GPS. Is there just a glitch, or would it be totally blackout for a while? Or?
Oh, you're saying about the interference, the jamming. Yeah. There's the frequency band that's on locally is susceptible to local jammers, or interference sources, which the government is kind of worried about having localized outages of GPS. I mean, just say there's a bad guy, there's a terrorist. It wouldn't take him too hard to light up a transmitter somewhere. Look at the Gulf War. I mean, that's what they thought they were going to have. They thought they were going to take down the GPS. But I mean, if you didn't have that, if you had something that's a little more powerful, like a couple million watts, that'd be harder to take down. So there, I know there's some people that are looking at that for other things other than entertainment. So that, again, positioning would be one application. We think there's others. It's just makes sense to have synchronization, have a priority in a network. This is all new. This is new. Mobile in hand, we're just kind of finding our way through it, how we go right now. So.
I filled that in.
Is there any handoff standards in the bulk? In
the can.
Yep.
There's mechanisms in there. There's There's a cell information table that's provided at the management layer in the system, which allows for you to announce other stations that are in the area carrying this regional content and how to identify that content. But it hasn't progressed to the point where it defines the actual protocol. This is how one makes the switch. But the hooks are there. I think time will tell. But at this point, no. The capability is there at the moment. Yeah, the hook. No, there's nothing in the specs yet. No. Hence why I'm here.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.